All right, so waiting for my Kindle. Okay, so we did 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, so we're ready then for 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. And I have that on page 369. You guys are the same?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Welcome to this moment of learning. I ask you to take it well into your heart and to carry it with you throughout your day. I share with you the secrets of your awakening. I love you enduringly. Of this you may be sure. You can never fall short of my love, because I know who you are, and I praise all that you do. My heart is within your heart. Together, our heart beats as one. This is the love that fills the world and fills your sight through you, which is also me. This is the lesson I have come to teach today, and the lesson that I ask you to open your mind fully to accept and learn. I am your heart, because I am you. This voice that you know as a reverberation of your heart is the voice of your truth. When I say it is I also mean it is you. It's interesting because people can really love reading or listening to wisdom. You know, they can love listening to Adyashanti or Muji or reading NTI or Course in Miracles, or, you know, people can be love those things that inspire them. But what we tend to do is we tend to think of those things as separate from us. And what this is saying is none of that is separate from our heart. You know, not at all. Everything that we love the most, because we're truly inspired by it, that is our heart. It's one with our heart. It's not separate from our heart at all. That's why we love it so much, right? And so the idea that it's separate from our heart, that's just the idea that needs to be let go. One thing that started happening for me a few years ago, and now it seems really consistent, is that I started recognizing wisdom no matter where I heard it, no matter what mouth seemed to speak it. I started literally to recognize it as my wisdom. So like Muji would speak, and I would hear my voice coming through Muji. Or Adyashanti would speak, and I would hear my voice coming through Adyashanti. Or somebody would make some wisdom post on Facebook, and I would see my voice. And I started to realize that it's all, literally, it's all my voice. And so one thing that doesn't happen for me, which happens for some people, is like if somebody else is sitting here expressing wisdom, or if some other teacher comes to town and they're expressing wisdom and everybody really loves them, I don't get any sense of jealousy or anything like that. I'm grateful, because I still see that as my voice. And whether they'll listen to that voice coming through that body or this body or some other form is irrelevant to me. I'm excited that they're listening to my voice. You know, because that voice is also their heart, and I know that. They're listening to their own heart. And so at some point, the idea of separation starts to die in the recognition of the consistency of wisdom. Right? That no matter who speaks it, it's the same. And I love it the same. So it's all one heart. Verses 5-10. I have told you that I will teach you to see differently. Now I will teach you how. I will teach you to see the world that you see differently by teaching you to see yourself through new eyes. I have told you that you see the world through the filter of your mind. This filter through which you see is your own judgment and belief about you. As this filter is changed, all that you see is changed, because the lens through which you see is made new. The secret to awakening is to awaken to you. It is to accept the blaze within as you. This is what you want to do, and this is what you must do in order to see as I see. So this is what I have come to help you do, and we will focus on doing this now. So it's interesting because, you know, he talks about, and this was taught in NTI Luke, that we see the entire world through the filter of our mind. So whatever is on our mind is what we see out there. So, for example, if I believe in unworthiness, I not only feel it here, but I see a lot of unworthy people or unworthy spiders, a lot of unworthiness out there, right? If I believe in rejectability, I see things out there that are totally rejectable, even situations that are rejectable, you know, things that just should not be. We talked about that recently, things that we call sin, because they should not even exist, right? But if those beliefs are erased from my mind, erased from my filter, I can't see that way anymore. I don't see unworthiness anymore. I don't see anything that's to be rejected. And maybe that's why, you know, when the moths at my house come fly out of the curtains and fly into my face, maybe that's why I giggle and everybody else that I know gets angry. You know, here in Pueblo in May when we have lots of moths, saying that for the recording, people can have lots of moths in their house in May. But I always giggle. I love seeing them. I love May. I love when the moths come, you know? So what's the difference between me and everybody else in town that hates them, you know? It's got to be something on my mind that was erased, and therefore I'm no longer seeing the moths through that idea, and everybody else still has that idea, and they're viewing the moths through that, right? And they see the moths as pesky and in the way, and you shouldn't be there, and, you know, you shouldn't be startling me, and, you know, all of those other thoughts. And so what this is saying is, in order to have true peace with everything, you know, even these moths that are in your house in May, you have to find what's in your mind that's causing you to see things in a way that is upsetting, and let that be healed. And Holy Spirit is telling us, so we're going to go do that now. So starting with verses 11 and 12. Look now at the unworthiness in your mind, which tells you that you do not deserve the gift I have come to give. Look at this belief and feel the pain it has plunged deep into your heart. We are going to pluck this pain right out of your awareness. So look at it, that you may pluck it cleanly without missing. So what Spirit seems to be saying here is that certainly within my mind at the time of the writing, because I was the scribe, but probably in the mind of almost everybody who's reading this, if not everybody who's reading this, you know, one spirit talks about, okay, we're going to heal that now. We're going to heal you now. Something in you says, not me. I'm not good enough to be healed. I'm not worthy enough to be healed. I'm not smart enough to be healed. I'm not, you know, enough in some way to be healed. And Spirit's saying, look at that. Look at that. Just look at it. That's all you're being asked to do. Don't sit here and pretend like, you know, like you don't have that thought in your mind if you do. Look at that thought and notice that that thought is saying, you aren't good enough. You aren't good enough for the perception of spirit, right? You aren't good enough for a completely healed mind. You aren't good enough to be at peace. Don't deny the thought. Look at it. And Spirit says, make sure you look at it, because that's how we let go of it, is by looking at it, not by pretending like it's not there. So that takes us to NTI Thessalonians chapter 2. Look now, deep within your mind and heart. We are looking for a false god that you have erected before your truth. This is a false image made of yourself through your own judgment that you could be that which is other than that which you are. We must raise this false being up from its hiding place, because it is from within hiding that it rules. Brought into the light of day, it cannot rule longer, because its falseness must be revealed. Sit quietly with your faith placed by your motive. Remember why you do this thing that you do. You are ready to look directly at your judgment of yourself, because you know it is not true, and because it is an obstacle to all that you do know. So again, we have this sense of unworthiness, this idea that I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough to heal. I'm not good enough to awaken. And what Spirit is saying is, but the one who's making that decision is you. You're the one that's sitting there telling yourself you're not good enough. Right? You're the one that's doing it. And Spirit wants you to really, really see that, that you're the one that's sitting there telling yourself that you're not good enough. Because you can't really stop being the one that tells yourself that until you get it that you are the one that tells yourself that. And what the mind likes to do is the mind likes to project it out and say, oh, but they're thinking it. Right? And the mind doesn't want us to take responsibility for it, because the mind knows that if we really take responsibility for it, then we can also let it go. So Spirit is again saying, pay attention. You're the one that tells yourself what a loser you are, in whatever language yourself, your mind does that. But you're the one that's always telling yourself how low you are, how stupid you are, how ugly you are, how distracted you are, how, you know, just whatever it is that you say. It's you, right? And notice that. Verses 13 to 15. Be willing to rest in the confidence of your faith as you call the demon within to meet your gaze. You can smile in confidence at your own invitation, knowing that as you stand firm in the knowledge of who you are, that which you shall see cannot shake you. For it is nothing more than your own judgment of yourself. It's funny that the thing that we're most scared of all, is our own judgment of ourself. And somewhere in there, there's a joke in that. Because, you know, clearly you're the one doing it, you know? If the thing that you're most afraid of is your own judgment of yourself. And, this is a story that I've told before, but it's appropriate to tell it again now. I experienced this judgment fully when I was joining with Laurent, because Laurent and I spent a lot of time on the phone together before we got together physically, and he was telling me all about his life, and you know, the way he described his life, I imagined him always being with very beautiful women, and I did not see myself as a very beautiful woman at all. And so as it got closer to time for us to join, I began to get very, very afraid that when he saw me, especially when he saw me naked, that he would really reject me, that he would just, ooh, gross. You know, like, you are the most sickening thing on the planet. And that really terrified me. And what that did is that brought up a lot of fear in me. But what I did was I practiced just being with the fear. And as I practiced just being with the fear, I went deeper into the fear. And this lasted 2 days. On the first night, I got to this point within myself where I saw that I was... It got to where it had nothing to do with Laurent. It got went way past him. And I saw that I was really afraid that if I became completely vulnerable, which means I did not defend myself in any way, did not protect myself in any way, and I went to God completely vulnerable and said, here I am, God, that God would look directly at me and say, not you. Like, it was very, very personal. Like, God would accept everyone else. God would forgive everyone else. but not me. Then the second night, this fear started up again, and I did the same thing. I just stayed with it, and I actually went past that, because what I came to see on the second night is when it was God rejecting me, as horrible as that was, there was actually still a defense mechanism in place, because it was an other. God is an other. And so I could say, oh, he rejected me, right? I could get mad at him. There was still a protection for me in there. And what I saw on the second night was I went right past that idea of other, and I went into where there was only one self. And what I saw, and this scared the bejesus out of me, what I saw was that what I was most afraid of is that I would fully reject myself. And you see, if you fully reject yourself, that's something you can never escape. Because remember, wherever you go, you're there. Mm-hmm. And so if you cave in to all-consuming self-hatred, that's hell. That's hell. And I saw that that fear was in me. And I saw that it really wasn't other people's rejection that I was afraid of. I was afraid of my own rejection. My own all-consuming judgment without a way out. That was the greatest fear of all. And that's what Spirit is telling us exactly right here. He says there is a demon in us. Demon means something that we're terribly afraid of. And he says, but if you are willing to look at the demon, you're going to discover that the demon is nothing other than your own judgment of yourself. And the amazing thing is, as horrible as that was, because I did face it, I faced it in a very live way, and as horrible as that was, the very next thing that happened after I realized what I feared the most was something in me, and this I can't exactly explain, I guess this is why they call it a miracle, something in me knew that could never happen. It's like we're not even capable of that. You may judge yourself really bad one day, but then the next day, you're going to like yourself again. You know, I mean, you're not even capable of judging that harshly. You're not capable of hating that much to where it's all consuming. And of course you're not capable of that because your natural state is love, you know. And so once I saw that it wasn't even possible, something in me was free. Because my greatest fear was all consuming judgment of myself. And the next thing I saw was, but that can't ever happen. Which means the greatest fear of all is an impossibility. It doesn't even exist, right? And there's a real big freedom in finding out that what you fear the most can never, ever, ever, ever happen. So again, Spirit is saying, be willing to rest in the confidence of your faith as you call the demon within to meet your gaze. You can smile in confidence at your own invitation, knowing that as you stand firm in the knowledge of who you are, that which you shall see cannot shake you, for it is nothing more than your own judgment of yourself, made solely by you. It is a judgment that can be completely taken away through your own delight and decision to do so. Imagine that all you have to do is decide to accept yourself, you know, where they say flaws and all. That's all you have to do, is decide that this thing is okay, right? And then you're free. You're allowed to be the personality. It's not even who you are truly. But if you can't be the personality, you're trapped, because right now you can't escape that experience. And so when you can be the personality and enjoy the personality, you know, as a temporary experience, because it's not who you are, but when you can be the personality and enjoy the personality and laugh at the personality and appreciate the personality, you're free. When there's no judgment, you're free. And this is what her class was about this week, right? It's the exact same topic. It's funny how things can go side by side like that.
Definitely.
Verses 16 to 17. Rest in the knowledge of love, which is your true self and the strength of truth. Rest in the knowledge of love, which is the universe and is God. Rest in the knowledge of love, which is everything that is real. Ask that which is not real to come from its hiding. So again, even though Spirit is teaching you about what you fear the most, and Spirit is teaching you that it's not true, that's not good enough. You have to see it for yourself. Otherwise, it's just intellectual knowledge. So the reason Spirit is telling you about it is so when you start to see it from yourself, you can go, oh yeah, this is what I was told I'd see. You know, it's not as surprising as a moth flying out from behind the curtains. You knew this moth was coming, right? So you don't have to be scared of it. So then you can allow yourself to continue the looking process because you were told that this was there. And that's really was my experience too, because I had already written this. So I had already been told that this was there before I had this experience, you know, with in my relationship with Laurent. But when it came, when it happened for me, when I saw it, I was like, ah, it really is there. You know, that's different. Like, ah, I do believe that. Ah, I do fear that. So even though you're told, you still want to allow the experience of honestly and sincerely seeing it for yourself. Because it's seeing it for yourself that's also going to allow you to go right past it to the truth. So intellectual knowledge is not enough. But again, the reason for the intellectual knowledge is if you start taking that downward trip, because trust me, it's a downward trip, you'll know this is okay. Like something in you will allow the downward trip to happen. You won't be afraid of it. You'll go ahead and go. So let's see. Oh, it looks like we're going to finish 2 Thessalonians tonight. Are you guys up for it? There's only one more. All right. The prayer in your heart will guide you. You need not pray. You need only listen. Remember that you are the vessel through which God's love pours into the world. Be willing to put aside the last remaining obstacle that blocks the conduit of love that you are. So again, your judgment of yourself is what keeps you clogged so that you're not this open conduit of love into the world. And what's really interesting is the first couple sentences, the prayer in your heart will guide you, and then it says you need not pray, you need only listen. In other words, it's a prayer that will rise up. And probably have all of you experienced that, where a prayer just kind of rises up for you from within? It's not the head praying, right? So let the prayer of your heart guide you.
On the spot.
On the spot. Yeah, exactly. On the spot. This is a time of freedom for you and all the world. Take this step in joy, for it is the step of freedom. You know, a couple weeks ago we had a boy in Santa Barbara shoot some other kids, right? And what this boy did that was a little different than all of the other boys who have done it in the last couple of years was he made a video first telling people why he was doing it so nobody has to guess. And you can actually go on YouTube. They left the video. I'm surprised they didn't take it down, but they left the video on YouTube, and you can go and watch it. And it's almost 7 minutes of this boy explaining that he's going to kill people and why. And do you know why he did it? Unworthiness. He felt unloved. Only he was projecting. He was angry at the people that he thought didn't love him. Not specifically, like the people he killed were strangers, but like the type. You know, the popular kids, the pretty people, the type. And he just wanted to kill them. He wanted to kill them. But unworthiness is what is the pain he was suffering from. And remember, we're all one. So his unworthiness and our unworthiness is the same. So if we want to help the world, we let go of our unworthiness. That's the most helpful thing we can do. And that's how I always feel motivated when I see things like that. I feel motivated to, in the words of the Course, accept the atonement for myself even more. And in fact, one teaching that I've been asked to speak on, and I'll probably do it tomorrow, there is a teaching, it shows up in many different paths, and the teaching is that when enough people allow their mind to be healed, we will reach a critical mass of healed minds, where the world then will begin to change drastically. And the world will then begin to reflect the love that we really are, because it's like the healed mind becomes the majority. Unfortunately, the opposite is true, however. If our minds are not healed, and if the unhealed mind is the majority, that's what's reflected in the world. So as we go in and heal our minds, we're helping to get to that critical mass point, wherever that is, and then the entire world is going to benefit. This is a very common teaching. And so right here, it's telling us that we do this not only for us, but for the world, right? This is a time of freedom for you and all the world. Take this step in joy, for it is the step of freedom. So when you heal your unworthiness, that's also a service that you're providing. Verses 6 to 10. Look well within yourself now and see the hollow darkness that is nothing. You may feel it in your heart. It may seem to cause you pain. You may notice it in your throat and mouth. It may seem to taste of putrid yuck. It may agitate your mind or your body. Sit peacefully by and notice it. It is like a wind whirling inside of you, but in actuality, it is nothingness. It is idleness. For it keeps you focused on nothing as if it is something. It keeps you thinking you are doing when in reality you are doing nothing at all. And this again is talking about that deep, deep belief in our unworthiness or our guilt or our shame. You know, there are people who can't be still. They can't do nothing. Because if they do nothing, their thoughts start attacking them. So they have to keep very busy all the time, right? There are other people who can't be with other people because the whole time they're with other people, in some way their thoughts are attacking them. Either they're having hate thoughts about the other people and they hate their own hate thoughts, and of course those hate thoughts are just a projection, right? Or they're imagining that everybody's hating them and it's just too uncomfortable for them to be around people, so they choose not to be around people. There are all different kinds of ways that this shows up in us. And that's what this is saying. It shows up in us in all kinds of ways. And it's asking you to notice how unworthiness or guilt or shame manifests in you. Notice your own personal way with it and look at it. You know, does unworthiness keep you from trying things that you would like to try? Does unworthiness keep you from being with people that you'd like to be with? Does unworthiness keep you like a slave to other people? You never say no. You know, you always say yes, 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 because you're afraid to say no. How is unworthiness manifesting in you? And look at it and admit it. Say, that's what this is. This is unworthiness, and this is how it manifests in me. Right? Your own personal unworthiness costume. Verse 11, you need this idleness that distracts no longer. Look at it. See that it isn't useful, as it serves no purpose in God. And when you find that unworthiness and how it manifests in you, how you act it out, you're going to see it's not useful. You're going to see that it's an obstacle. It always manifests as an obstacle. In some way, it's in the way of you being completely free, completely happy, completely authentic, right? It's in the way. So see that it isn't useful, as it serves no purpose in God. This is the king of all illusions. And again, remember, we're talking about your own judgment of yourself. To this king you may say goodbye. Your busy mind is the idleness I speak of. Do not ask your mind to lead you in what I ask you to do. Ask your mind to rest, that you may be led by the heart. Again, the thinking mind is the judger. It's the problem. So you're going to have to shift in order to find your way out. You can't expect the mind to lead you out. And lots of people make that mistake. They try and get their mind to think differently. You got to leave the mind behind and shift to the heart. Oh, looks like some kind of a mistake here. It's supposed to be verses 14 and 15. It says verses 14 in the Kindle. Does it say that in the book?
No, 14 and 15.
Okay, so that was just a change they made in the Kindle. Your thoughts may seem to trick you, as many of them support the busy idleness of the mind. Therefore, manage your thoughts this way. So again, you cannot trust your thoughts. And so many people make this mistake. Everybody, I think, at some point makes this mistake. They try and get to a point in the mind where they can see themselves as innocent or worthy or good. And so they're trying to get the mind to agree with that. And the mind never will. The mind is going to say, nah, 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 you know what you did. You know what you're thinking. You know how you lie. The mind is never, ever going to agree with you. So, and even when you're trying to shift to the heart, the mind is going to say, what are you doing? You can't just pretend like this isn't true. You did do that. You did say that. You are a liar. You are lazy. The mind is just, and so the only way to be free of your self-judgment is to learn not to listen to the mind. It's never going to happen any other way, because the mind is always going to tell you what a loser you are. Always. You can count on it. Okay? So, this is teaching us a way to manage our thoughts, starting with number 3. As a thought comes up in your attempts to rest, look at it gently, with no attachment to what it says. Ask only this question: have you come to me from the heart? So a thought rises up and says, come on, come on, come on, come on, you know you can't do this, you aren't good enough to do this. You say, have you come to me from the heart? That's your only response. Have you come to me from the heart? Sentence 5 says, you will feel the answer immediately. Do not doubt what you feel. It is the heart that answers this question in judgment. When the answer is no, ask the thought to pass by in peace. Feel no resistance to that which you've asked to fade away. So again, a thought comes up saying, you can't do this, you'll never be able to do this. Have you come to me from the heart? Immediately I hear an answer, no. But the answer seems to come from someplace else. Then I don't need to listen to this thought. I don't need to believe this thought. I let this thought go. That's how it works. It's called practicing discernment. When the heart answers yes, when you ask, have you come to me from the heart? Then you may relax into listening. Relax fully, as you need not question this thought anymore. Let your questioning turn to trust. Let listening be the practice of the quiet mind. You are listening to your true voice, and it is teaching you who you truly are. So imagine that I'm trying to learn to practice discernment, and I know that I just made a mistake. I know that I just believed a thought that, was not helpful. And then I hear another thought say, it's okay. And I say, have you come to me from the heart? Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's all right that you made a mistake. See, now I can relax and listen. So it's really very, very effective, because you'll get the right answer every time. You just ask, have you come to me from the heart? If the answer is no, you don't need to listen to that anymore. If the answer is yes, then you listen. Very, very simple little practice. Peace is always within you, as I am in you and I am you. Rest within the gentle knowledge of this as you follow the restful work of ridding yourself of the faults. What you see cannot disturb your peace, because your peace cannot be disturbed. So look within, remembering what it is that you do. You have my blessings as I am joined with you. Now remember, 2 Thessalonians is asking us to look at the demon, which is our own judgment of ourself. So one trick you can't fall for is that the strong, harsh judgments that are going to come up if you're doing this, You can't just believe them. You have to remember to ask them, have you come to me from the heart? Have you come to me from the heart? You have to stay in that detached practice. And what may happen is the judgments may get stronger and they may sound more true, right? They're going for a bullseye. That's what they're doing. Right? And they're going to start really going for a bullseye. You have to stay with the practice. Have you come to me from the heart? No, then I don't need to listen to you. See, that's your only job. So no matter how strong or how right those thoughts seem to be, you don't judge them based, like if they come and they say, you know that when you were 20, you murdered that guy and got away with it. Somebody else went to prison. He's in prison now and it's, he didn't do it. You did it. You know this. You can't say, oh my God, that's true. You have to say, have you come to me from the heart? See, no matter how strong it gets, right? So you don't want to fall for the, oh my God, that's true. Have you come to me from the heart? That's the question. And then no matter how true the thought is in your story, right? If you haven't come to me from the heart, I don't need to listen. I can let you go. Right? Verse 17. I leave you now to do the silent work that I have asked, but I do not really leave you, as I am the one within that does this work in confidence. Grace be in your mind as well as your heart. Amen. So I think our assignment this week is obvious. I think that we do that exercise of looking at our thoughts and asking, have you come to me from the heart? Right? And see what happens with that. So I'll stop the recording and we'll have a little bit of silence.